Okay, welcome everybody. I am William DeHewitt, and I am broadcasting live from the vast plains of the unfree state, somewhere in the old Boer Republic. Folks, it is great to be back behind the golden GAB microphone. Goys are broadcasting. And, well, as of today, and who knows what the future will bring, the new golden GAB microphone is an old black Samsung phone. It's not even a smartphone. But that's all I have for the moment. I should be getting a new smartphone sometime soon. I don't really use the phone all that much. I guess I kind of miss it a little bit when I'm out and I would like to use the internet. But other than that, I really don't need a smartphone. I hope I am coming in loud and clear using this old technology. And, I thought I'd apologize to the listeners. I know I've been gone for the past 3 weeks. And, folks, it's not been fun. I've had, you know, all types of different problems coming up here and there that have caused me not to be able to broadcast. And I've been working on these issues, and there's more than one. And my hope is to be able to give you a quality live radio show at least once a week. Yeah. A lot will be changing in my life. As far as I know, I have gotten a job. It's just a very, very part-time job, but it should be enough for me to, live a little better than I have been. And I think that'll open up a little more space for, a little more freedom, even though I'll be working a few days a week. The money will allow me to have a little bit more freedom, I think, than I have been. So I look forward to this. And I really do miss being behind the microphone. And I have a great show lined up for you tonight. This show I've been wanting to do now for at least a month. And this show is about energy. Now, it's not, the mainstream type of energy show that, you'll hear anywhere else. This will be a little more, I'd say esoteric, maybe, if that's the correct word. I think you'll have to use your minds and your brains and your spirit, your Aryan spirit, in order to maybe comprehend what I am about to share with you this evening. Now, a lot of it, I think, as I said, is esoteric, the information. And so it's not academically provable for those of you out there who have your intellectual hearts set on using the information made available to us by our Jew enemies who control academia and the media and all the other outlets that they make readily available for us to consume. Yes, I've had to dig a little deeper. I've had to use my own intuition, my own spiritual essence, if you will, in order to put the information that that I've gathered together to hopefully form a cohesive and coherent way of thoughts, ideas. And what got me off on this journey, if you will, was an article that I had come across a few months ago. It might even have been longer. I just put it to the side because I really wasn't ready to use it. And so that's what happens a lot. I come across information, and I keep it in the back of my mind and, of course, bookmarked, and I always come back to it when I'm ready for it. And this information has to do with people-powered crowd farms. And the plan would harvest energy of human movement, okay? Now, this article is from August 1st, 2007, and the source is the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. And basically, two grad students there, well, they want to harvest the energy of human movement in urban settings, like commuters in a train station or fans at a concert. Now, this so-called crowd farm would turn the mechanical energy of people walking or jumping into a source of electricity. Yeah, a crowd farm in Boston's South Station Railway Terminal, well, it would work like this. A responsive subflooring system made up of blocks that depress slightly under the force of human steps would be installed beneath the station's main lobby. Now, the slippage of the blocks against one another as people walked would generate power through the principles of the dynamo, a device that converts the energy of motion into that of an electric current. Yes, folks, this article really got me fired up, okay? Now, on the surface, it doesn't seem like such a bad idea, maybe to harness the energy of humans, if it's just by walking and there's technology harvesting the energy and they're able to use it, you know, in our everyday lives rather than, the Jews who go around the world, rape, rob, and pillage Mother Nature's natural resources from every country that is not their own, then sell it back to us and then pollute the planet while they're at it. Yeah, I don't like when Jews rape Mother Nature and then use her energy, her resources against her and against us. So I can see that, while we're walking, if there's some sort of technology that, can be created to harvest it could be called kinetic energy, maybe, or I think that's what they'd be harvesting, the kinetic energy, just by our motion. But, folks, this is only what they are putting out, only what they are showing us on the surface. I have heard now the past 4 or 5 years, read articles, listened to lectures by Michael Kellinger, he's a South African, kind of liberal, involved with Ubuntu, which is basically kumbaya for all the peoples of the world to get along and we're all equal and all that rubbish. But Michael Kellinger really is pretty knowledgeable, and I think he's very on point when it comes to a particular subject. And that subject is he's found these old ancient stones basically just lying around in plain sight all around Africa and I suppose all around the world. And these stones, there's two types. One is round like a donut, and then the other one looks like an ice cream cone. And when the ice cream cone stone is strikes the donut-shaped stone, well, it rings like a bell. These are just two, you know, stones. They look like regular stones, except, you know, for their shape, being a donut and an ice cream cone. And to my knowledge, you need those two specific stones in order for it to resonate like a bell. But I'll get more into that very shortly. They say that in the beginning, folks, was the vibration, or in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, right? Well, if you understand what the Word could possibly be, and if you understand what matter is, well, the Word could be, you know, like vibration plus consciousness equals matter. Have many of you heard this formula before? I've heard it now for quite some time. So it makes sense that the Word could be vibration or sound plus consciousness, and then this could be the formula for our physical matter in this world. To me, that sounds very plausible. And so, in the beginning was the vibration. And the vibratory nature of matter, well, it's even mentioned in the Jew Bible or the Christensen Bible. Yes, John's Gospel starts with, in the beginning was the Word, as I said. And it teaches us that this vibration is from God and is God himself. Yeah. The word in this verse is the Greek word logos or logos, you know, like that clown Jan Irving, the old Gnostic media, is now called logos media. Yes, so to him, logos is God, but to my understanding, logos is merely well, let's see, how can you define it here? The Greek word is reason or plan. So is God the reason or the plan, i.e. logos or logos? Or is God the actual word, the vibration itself, bringing matter to life with the combination of sound and consciousness? Just something to think about there, but I believe I really am on to something here. Using logic, folks. There's that word, logic, logo, yeah. All right. So there is a saying out there that, you know, conversation shortens the distance and singing lightens the load. It's an old Russian proverb, right? Well, back to Michael Kellinger here. In the recent Global Energy Breakthrough Conference in Boulder, Colorado, and I believe this took place back in like 2015, Michael Kellinger shared his theory that sound is one of the most abundant forms of free energy on the planet. Or I would say plane. Yeah, I know. Go ahead, make fun of me. He said that sound is the primordial source of all things and is the common denominator of all creation. Now, with that being said, folks, if an, well, let's say, extraterrestrial race wanted to harvest energy from this plane or planet, well, it could create such energy with sound. And there is evidence that the ancients or the, the extraterrestrials or the fallen angels or the fallen Aryans or, I've written articles comparing them. I really think, yes, these are ancient Aryans, not extraterrestrials. But there is evidence that the ancients used sound as energy. Now, I say this. Now, remember what got me on to this topic, folks. This article about these MIT students finding a way to harvest energy so that we can have electricity in our everyday lives without polluting the planet through, due climate change or global warming, these fraudulent control-based fear tactics and guilt tactics they use against us, while it's they who are, polluting the plane or the planet. It is they who are raping and misusing the resources Mother Nature provides and then blames it on us and then charges it for us through slavery. But Michael Tellinger is a South African scientist, explorer, and founder of the, like I said, Ubuntu Liberation Movement. Now, I am going to skip. I don't think it's important to tell you everything about Michael Tellinger. But what I think is important is that Michael explains the basics of these ancient artifacts that I described to you, these donut-shaped and ice cream-shaped stones, rocks, that have been found and that were used to generate sound. And he further explains how sound was used as energy to levitate objects in order to create the monuments that opened vortices, which followed spacecraft to come and go. All right, now I don't know about the opening of vortices and the spacecraft coming and going, but you might be onto something with the vortices part, because when sound resonates, frequency changes and reality changes. So if you want to maybe compare, the opening of vortices to maybe the changing of frequency and changing the laws of something, I can see maybe how that could be possible. But these small round circles in the shape of donuts or toruses, I like that, that's a key word, torus. These round circular stones are toruses, and toruses, I think, could have something to do with vortices if combined, never mind, what I'm trying to say. If the energy or the resonance being produced of these donuts, maybe they could, in fact, open a vortice, right? So these donuts or toruses and ice cream-shaped cone stones, well, they were found all over the landscape in South Africa and across the world. Now, at one time, these beads or donut-shaped crystalline stones had a higher trade value than gold because of their ability to generate energy through sound. And the ice cream cone-shaped stones' properties, which run and reverberate with the harmonic frequencies of sound when struck. Stone columns serve as antenna and are found in many of the ancient sites. Now, my mind, folks, when I was going through this and putting this together, was just racing in 6 million directions, okay? Were the Anunnaki, or the Aryans, or the aliens, or the angels, were they energy harvesters? Well, the evidence seems to say so. These so-called Anunnaki, who have been compared to Aryans. They've also been compared to reptilians. I don't know. I tend to think more so of Aryans, but who knows? These race of beings that dominate and control the planet today. Yes, folks, I have said it once. I'll say it again. They are the masters of this world, and Jews are their chosen people. Okay? And, well, they would be the so-called, I hate this word, Illuminati, and are speculated by many sources, well, to be enslaving mankind to mine gold for them. You know, this old Jews, Zechariah Sitchin theory, where they came down here and they needed to repair their planet's atmosphere, presumed to be Nibiru. Yeah, I don't buy any of that. Really don't. It said just earlier in the article that these stones were more valuable than gold. Why? Because they resonated sound and levitated objects. And, well, which came first? These stones or gold? And, you know, I'll get into later, which I don't know if many of you will appreciate it, but I know some of you will, the story about the old ancient silicon trees, these gigantic silicon trees that are no longer in existence, and they are known as the Tree of Life. Now, there are said to be one left, maybe, at the North Pole, but that might not even be there anymore because now it's called Mount Meru, and there's a Tree of Life on top of it. Yes, folks, the theory goes that these gigantic trees were chopped down by giants, and what is left of these silicon trees are what we know of as mountains. It makes sense because, now, when I say mountains, I'm referring to Rocky Mountains. Now, there's lots of evidence out there. Devil's Tower is one, where you can see the crystalline, hexagon-shaped columns in the stone. It petrified. And when oxygen hit these silicon trees, when they were chopped down or blown up, well, this is where precious stones come from. This is where gold and diamonds and minerals and everything that we hold dear that Mother Nature provides, this is where it all comes from chopped down silicon trees. This is why there's Rocky Mountains, and this is why there's dirt piles or, dirt mountains with shrubs growing on them. This is the waste from mining. You know, the digging. Where does the dirt from the digging in the mines have to go? Well, they pile it up. It becomes dirt mountains. Right? So my point is, I don't think they were trying to enslave man to mine gold to repair their planet's atmosphere. I think they were trying to harvest these stones, and gold was just an added bonus they found use for, or they found it valuable. This could be where oil comes from. You know, these petrified trees turned to stone, and it's, lifeblood. The oil could be a result of it. Also, I know when you do a lot of mining, well, this is more times than not that you strike water. And so this could be why the biblical floods happened. I don't think it's an accident that there's a causeway in Ireland, Giant's Causeway, where it looks like a cliff to us, but you can see the hexagonal columns. You can see it's clearly not a volcano in lava hardening, you know. These are perfect natural law type of patterns. And yeah, I know I'm getting a little off the energy topic, but really I'm not, because you need to understand this. If these gigantic trees really were not just a fairy, you know, like Jack and the Beanstalk, or, you know, even the Germanic Eddas speak of gigantic forests and trees, these sacred groves. You know, this could be what Table Mountain in South Africa is, in Cape Town. There's all kinds of different types of Rocky Mountains. Of course, you have the American Rocky Mountains. And close by, you have the Grand Canyon, which, if you use your head, really does look like a mining, a deserted mining site. They scraped it all out, got everything they needed out of it, and then they tell us it is a natural treasure and a wonder of the world, folks. This is how Jews lie to you. Yes, it's important because it's another lie. It could get people to start looking at everything in a different way, folks. I don't, you know, there's a lot of people out there that don't like to talk about flat earth or these silicon trees. You know, I don't care if you like it or not. I find it relevant. Because it's truthful, folks, that if someone figures out that they've been lied to about something big, well, then they start to look at everything. And that, folks, can only work in our favor. That can only, I think, help our cause. I, however, am not one, though, who will do show after show talking about flat earth and all these other topics that I think matter, but they don't matter when it comes to the survival of the Aryan race, okay? But if you don't like it, well, don't listen. That's all I have to say, you know? But back to Michael Tellinger. He estimates that there were more than 10 million stone circle ruins. Now, these stone circle ruins could be stones piled on top of each other, you know, done by man, or they could be the remnants of these gigantic silicon trees. Because what I forgot to mention, folks, is that there were no stones on Earth until these trees were chopped down. In fact, Earth wasn't even a solid mass. This is provable. Because if you really do your homework and look into ancient history and creation stories, there was a race of beings called the Namlulu. These Namlulu were one of, if not the first beings on Earth, okay? And they were ethereal beings. And they were able to actually switch dimensions, if you will, change their frequency, their vibration, and change dimensions. I would compare this to going to other planets, all right? I don't believe in space travel. I think it's another Jew lie. I think that once you change the frequency of an object, that becomes a reality. And when you change that frequency of something, you know, for instance, something that sticks in my mind, I watched a video about with a sponge being put in front of a speaker that went up extremely high in frequency and very low in frequency. And you can see the sponge change form and shape and pattern before your eyes. So who's to say that because we can only see five colors or seven colors, I'm sorry, that you know, X-rays, radio rays, gamma rays, you know, all over the spectrum. Who's to say that there is not life on those, you know, in those frequencies, realities? You know, we can only exist in this small seven-colored light reality. So if our frequencies were to change, isn't it possible that we could exist elsewhere or in a different plane of existence just by changing your frequency? Yes, folks, this is the direction I tend to see with the big picture of life. The goal is, I believe, to liberate ourselves spiritually, and you do that by raising your vibration, raising your spiritual level up the spine or the chakras, which are just light centers. folks, I really cannot wait. It's wonderful to get notes while you're doing a live show. It really is. All right, so where was I here? Yes, I really think that when you change your vibrational tone, this is what could be ascension is. This could be what descending is to a lower vibrational plane of existence, or ascending to a higher plane of existence. And so by changing the frequency of the earth and chopping down the gigantic trees, well, that enabled them to put the firmament up, which is, in my estimation, an electromagnetic grid. Yes, because we all are electrical beings. We have electrical chakras in our bodies. We basically need electricity to live, at least comfortably. So hopefully you can, try to understand the way I see things. If not, well, keep trying, or else just write me off as some kook. I don't care. But yes, these stones Michael talked about. Think about that, folks. If they were struck, it causes, matter, material things to levitate. And it's been proven. This isn't theory. So think about the pyramid construction. What are these gigantic blocks that are the pyramid? What are they? Are they the petrification of silicon trees, and then they used stones to levitate them in order to place them and construct them? That makes more sense to me than any other theory out there. Are there any callers out there? This would be a good time to take a call, I think, if there are any out there listening, if any decided to show up because they're not used to me showing up. Or even maybe you, Richard, do you have any questions or thoughts on what I'm proposing here?
Not really anything to add yet. I did find it curious, this technology they're talking about to harness the energy of, kinetic energy of people walking in the local area. That's curious, but it's obviously giving their energy to someone else for a third party to profit from without their consent. So it is very much part of the same elite Judaic mindset as far as the greed of corporations.
I was going to get into that in the second hour, a little bit more on how I think it is and can be used for ill reasons. In fact, I might as well just get into that now. I really do not believe, folks, that this is anything new. These MIT students proposing this harvesting of energy, right? Michael Tellinger, the guy I'm talking about here, these stones, he has, in so many words, suggested that a lot of these old, Roman Colosseums, or, Greek, would it be like the Pantheon maybe, or these stadiums where they had lots of people gathering at one time for, maybe the Olympics or for, you know, bullfights or concerts, you name it, sporting events, anything. These stones, well, if they're able to levitate objects, he suggests that they are able to actually harvest everybody's energy using these stones, which is why they built these colosseums with columns and out of a particular type of stone. So they could very well, folks, have been harvesting our energy from the very beginning. And, you know, it's very interesting where most of our cities, or at least the so-called important ones, are on particular ley lines. And these ley lines, the natural ones, are of silicon, which, again, brings back the theory of these gigantic silicon trees, which are chopped down, and they're able to still tap into that energy source and somehow, use us as our energy, and somehow use these stones or the old ley lines, which I've heard, which I don't think that's very extreme thinking about the ley lines, to harvest the energy. It's very precise because of where these cities are. And so think of the energy, think of the emotions, think of the movement with a fan, watching a modern day football game or basketball game or rock concert. They just, have been able to update the technology, if you will. It's the same technology, but they are just able to make it look more modern, I guess. So, why else besides distracting us? Or, they say bread and circus, they want to keep us entertained, keep us distracted while they enslave us. Besides that, why else would they build these stadiums and give us sports and the Olympics and entertainment? I really think they don't do it without purpose. And so harvesting our energy could very well be the main reason. Enslavement isn't enough, Gilliam. Your time, your creative essence, and your actual creating, building something isn't enough. They want your energy, too. They feed off of it. Think of why the media is always, triggering negative emotion. And then by us engaging, in a way, we kind of create our own prison. Physical prison. Electromagnetic prison. To me, it's all very interesting. To me, it's all very, very, very possible. And so, that's what I like to do. I like to get people thinking, and I hope, rather than mocking me or ridiculing me, folks, you'll use your brains and try to connect the dots like I do. And maybe, figure something else out that I've not on your own. So besides, actually using rocks and this technology that the MIT students want to use and the technology that Michael Tellinger tells us with the stones, what else is there out there that could possibly vampirize our energy? Well, go back to 1999, The Matrix. Maybe they were telling us something there. I hate that movie. I know I'm able to grab meaning from it, but it's been so, I think people see the wrong stuff in that movie, like red pills and blue pills and Zion and all the crap. That becomes popular. But then a lot of the other information in there that's a little more difficult to grasp on your own, figure out on your own, that all gets ignored. But in that movie, human bodies were plugged into an elaborate grid, right? Where their energy is harvested to power the robot overlords, in the movie, right? Is that possible? I mean, I think using one man or one woman or one human, that does put off energy, but I don't think it's nearly enough, which is why they need a lot of us at one time, which is why they have been promoting, you know, the population growth. But I know a lot of you out there will say, no, they're not promoting population growth. Just go look at that place in Georgia, the Guidestones. They want a small population. Yeah, ultimately, I think they do. But they want a lot of us here now to harvest our energy. And I think, according to this information I've been reading, is what they're really trying to do is to find a way to store it. So it would make sense that they try to harvest as much energy from as many people as possible and find that way to store it. Maybe unlike in the past. Maybe in the past they didn't have the technology to store it. Maybe they have figured it out now. Who knows? But I find that interesting with the Matrix reference. Have any of you ever heard of energy vampires? Or maybe psychic vampires? Well, if you think I haven't jumped off the esoteric deep end yet, folks, well, check this out. Psychic vampirism. Most of us want to be positive, upstanding people, right? Yeah, we do. Unfortunately, we have these overlords, these vampires out there that enslave us and suck our energy until there's none left. Here, I'm going to try to explain or even explore the ins and outs of emotional vampirism or psychic vampirism, right? People are stealing energy from each other every day and right under our noses. And there are several examples, and this isn't some esoteric hoodoo or, you know, this I think is real, and I'll prove it to you. So what is emotional or psychic vampirism? An emotional vampire is someone who consciously or unconsciously evokes emotions in others specifically to feed on the triggered emotional energy. Yeah, I like that word, triggered, because isn't that, folks, what a lot of people are becoming today? Triggered. This triggering of emotion, well, it evokes emotions and emotional energy. Now, there's psychiatrists and psychologists out there who have used the term emotional vampires, and they fit the description of like the narcissist or the victim or the controller or the splitter. Yeah, the narcissist would have the narcissistic personality. The victim would have a dependent personality. The controller would have an obsessive compulsive personality. And the splitter would be the borderline personality type. All right? I'm sure you've all heard of these personality types, right? Now, from my observations, folks, everyone is an emotional vampire, okay? We all are, and it's merely a function of the situation and the conditions that determine the level and degree of our vampirism. Now, saying that some people are energy vampires while other people aren't sets up a victim-perpetrator game that the ego loves to play. Now, I've told you all about the egos in the past. These egos we create through our habits, and then they become entities, and ultimately they feed through us, okay? Now, you don't need to take a long survey to determine if you're an energy vampire now. Just answer these two questions. Do you have everything you want in life so that you feel complete and whole? And from moment to moment, do you live in a state of flow, fully present, feeling light, alive, alert, and free? Well, if you cannot honestly answer yes to both of those questions, folks, you are an energy vampire, at least some of the time. All right? As you'll continue to see as I explain this, everyone has a vampire inside of them. Perhaps many. I call them egos if you listen to my old shows. Now, the conditions of the individual, both internally and within their environment, determines how often the vampire gets activated. We have these, there's something called Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And Maslow labeled all of our basic needs deficiency needs and external needs. All right? Like, we need self-actualization needs. This is how we grow spiritually, right? But then we also need, you know, our esteem needs to be fed, belonging, our safety, and even our psychological needs, right? These are deficiency needs. Things like biology, safety, belonging, and esteem needs are deficiency needs in that we aren't meeting them. And we feel anxious and neurotic. And they are external needs because, well, we seek to meet them through the outside world. Now, this feeling of a need not being met mainly relates to situations from our childhoods. So oftentimes, you know, we're not conscious of why we feel a sense of lack. In the absence of a sense of completeness, of feeling whole, we seek sources outside of ourselves for what's missing, right? And this unconscious drive often leads us to vampirism, to stealing the energy, light, and even the luck from others. Doesn't this sound like what Jews do to the entire world population on a daily basis, on a second-to-second basis, folks? Witches, warlocks, vampires, well, they're all examples of archetypes that reside in what Carl Jung called the collective unconscious. And envy, well, envy triggers these so-called witches and warlocks. Hunger or deficiency evokes vampires. Yeah, I don't think this is that unreasonable to talk about if Carl Jung actually looked into it. Carl Jung, I don't think would waste his time if there wasn't something to this, folks. So, all of this deficiency leads to the rise of vampires in our culture. Yeah, I don't even need to go through the TV series or the movies, you know, like Twilight and the Vampire Diaries and, you know, what else? Blade, Dracula, goes on and on. And what's the common denominator of all of these movies and TV shows and even literature? Yeah, you guessed it, folks. Oy vey. Yeah. But the original vampire archetype, folks, as far as I know, and I've studied this character, her name's Lilith. Now, according to the myth, Lilith was Adam's first wife, right? And Lilith leaves Adam and later becomes a queen of the demons, right? Now, the more common term for this type of demon, and I've talked about this before, is a succubus, which is a so-called supernatural entity found in folklore and medieval legends. Yes, I talked about the succubus in a show where I, in reference to how we have sexual intercourse, and how our, you know, how a lot of our energy is wasted, and how it works against, you know, trying to open up all of your energy light centers, your otherwise known as chakras or churches, you know, the seven chakras, the seven colors of the rainbow. Yes, even the colors, folks, are of energy. So a succubus, well, they don't just come in dreams, folks. One can argue that any time a woman is behaving like a seductress or an enchantress, she's in some way, well, could be possessed by a succubus. And we create them ourselves. So, you know, just through having the porn industry, I think, is designed for us to give away our sexual energy, which is the most potent form of energy, rather than purify it and raise it up the spine so that it reaches each of the seven chakras, which leads to spiritual liberation and ascension, if you will, or to Christos. Well, they want us to waste our energy. And, well, of course, there are entities out there who will feed off of it. The incubus and the succubus are two. So I hope you guys see where I'm going with this. I hope, if there aren't any callers out there or anyone to challenge me today, I hope, and in the comments, you know, I hope you'll leave comments. I hope you'll challenge me if you think I'm wrong, or show me where I'm wrong. To me, this all makes sense. And if you tie all the information together that I've been presenting, well, I think it really, really does start to create a very vivid picture. But only half of the puzzle, tonight at least, folks, of the puzzle I'm trying to put together has been complete. And I will now be taking my break. I really need to take this break. So, folks, please stay tuned, and I will be back on the flip side.
Thank you.
welcome back, everybody. Thanks for waiting through the break. I really needed the break there, so I appreciate. But yeah, I have a lot more to go through here. I'm very excited to go through this. I'm going to be, of course, talking more about energy and the different types of it. Before I get into the new part, though, I don't think I really need to. Yeah, I did tell you that I would prove how psychic vampirism is real. This is to continue on the energy vampirism. I hope you all find this interesting, right? We have what's called the subtle energy body, all right? Now, in many religions, which I don't subscribe to, maybe a little bit from this religion, a little bit from that religion, but not in whole, like Taoism or Buddhism or Hinduism. Those religions, they explain that various types of energetic fields surround our bodies, okay? From the crown, like where when you so-called ascend after you've opened up all your seven chakras, there's a small hole on your top of your head, crown, and that's your crown chakra. And that is where the Keferic body is. And you can get energy, like cosmic energy, go in, or the spirit can actually go out if the frequency of your body is tuned to a higher frequency. And you do this by opening up the chakras, right? In other words, you do it by purifying your base chakra energy, all right? Now, in the Taoist arts, for example, one of these fields is called the Wei Kai, or the Guardian Kai, which forms a kind of protective shield around the body, all right? Now, in the Buddhist tradition, energy medicine and the transpersonal psychology, they often refer to this as the subtle energy field. Now, I've heard of that before. Hopefully, you all have as well. But the point is we have protection and energy fields around our body, and we should be able to, if we are able to restore our energy field or to even stop the leakage or the vampirism of it, that this should be possible. But the reason why we're so vulnerable is because of all the trauma that we ensue in everyday life. Because of, the fear of the media. All these, just a few examples here, these are what makes us sick. I've often said, and I've been very truthful about my own life, that I've changed my diet. I've done all kinds of things to try to bring myself to a better health. But for some reason, folks, I always still feel fatigued. I always feel like, sometimes it's just hard for me to get up and get motivated to even walk my wolf or to go out and cook dinner. And folks, I'm not out of shape. I'll be 45 Saturday. I'm in pretty good shape. But for some reason, I'm always tired. And it's not the type of tired, I don't know. There's a difference. Like when I was tired when I was younger and tired now. When I was younger, I was tired because I was very active and spent a lot of my energy. Nowadays, I try to conserve my energy and try to use it to my advantage, I'm aware of my energy. And for some reason, I still do not feel well, no matter what I do. And so, for me, there's really no other answer than someone or something has to be stealing my energy or siphoning my energy or using my energy. You know, that I've said in the past that the egos that you create, you feed them, and they, in essence, will use your energy. My partner's mother, for example, this is odd to me. You know, she's a 74-year-old woman, and she eats more than both my partner and I together. It's almost as if she, like, has maybe a parasite attached to her where she's just always hungry. I don't know how else to explain it. I'm not saying she has a parasite. I'm just, you know, thinking out loud here. You know, there's something that feeds off of us that leaves us drained, that leaves us feeling sick, that leaves us feeling hungry. You know, this isn't normal. We are energy beings, so we are energy. Why are we tired? It doesn't make sense to me. So some of the symptoms of one stealing light from you can be the benefits of stealing light from others. One will do it to feel free of their own shortcomings, right? They feel empowered to achieve more, to earn more money, to be more popular and influential, to feel good about yourself as you, quote, help others, right? Or to be more competent, confident, and powerful. This is the reason why one might want to steal light or energy from you, all right? This is why you could possibly be feeling tired all the time, like I do. Stealing light, well, it has a lot of compelling benefits. Not for you, who it's being stolen from, but simply put, it's the fastest way for one to feel better about themselves. And even these gurus, right? These religious gurus. Folks, I don't really think there are many, if any, out there who are there for your own good. I believe, and I hate that word believe, but I'm pretty damn sure, folks, that these so-called gurus, they steal the light from their students. I consider myself a teacher. I am not a guru, but I get on the air not to make myself feel better, not to prop up my egos, not to, you know, it's really of no benefit for me, maybe therapeutic, if any, if that may be the only gain I get out of it. When I get information or have ideas, I tend to like to share them. So yes, I would not consider myself a guru at all. Maybe a teacher, and I hope I don't leave you feeling drained, folks. That's not my intent. My intent is to share the light, to give ideas, and gurus and students, well, they enter this kind of mutually complicit relationship, and you know, the student unconsciously agrees to give their guru their light. Kind of like when you get on your knees and you pray and become prey to the God that you pray to or talk to. Yeah, think about it. You're on your knees and your rear end is left wide open. And that's where, you know, like black magicians, that's why they will have, you know, like the Celtic rebel used to talk about, you know, butt sex. They have butt sex because it's a negative charge, but it's a way to vampirize energy from young boys. So beware of what is around you when you're on your knees praying and turning the other butt cheek, so to speak, for you Christians out there. Yeah, and there's also big brand personalities who steal light. You know, think about I'm on the topic of religion, think about the mega churches and these so-called preachers, you know, like Jew Osteen in that huge basketball stadium called the Summit, the old Houston Rockets stadium, fills that place up probably two or three times a week. And you think he's not vampirizing your energy from you folks? I can see right through the Jew. I don't know how more cannot. But here, folks, I told you I would give you proof. Here are the seven signs of psychic thievery, all right? How do you know if someone has stolen your light and energy? Here are a few common signs. And tell me if you have not felt these before. The first one is chronic feeling of fatigue, especially after seeing certain individuals. Wrestling with feelings of self-doubt and a lack of confidence. Having a poor self-image or rejecting your own self-image. Constant struggles with money and even feeling repelled by it. Yeah, folks, that's a big one for me right there. I always have constant struggles with money because usually I don't have enough of it. And when I do have it, it bothers me because I have so many things that I unfortunately need to take care of. I never have enough. So really, I try to stay away from money. But unfortunately, we need it. You can have a persistent feeling of shame and guilt, a theme of lack. Runs through much of your life experience is another sign. You see, folks, I lack a lot, but I don't let it get to me to where it ruins my life experience. I've learned to just live without and to live more simply. And really, I think you feel better, even though, like I said, something is doing this to me where I feel drained, and I still have not been able to put my finger on it, which is part of the reason why this research is so interesting to me. I'm covering many, many different angles of energy, folks. Now, here are five ways to steal energy from others. Now, I'm not trying to tell you to do this. I'm just telling you the five ways so that you can try to combat this. After all, this show I titled, it's the first episode of White Magic Spell. Yes, I can't remember the exact title I came up with last week, but White Magic Spell is the title of this show. This is not No Separation, No Peace. This is an attempt, the first episode, to try to reverse the black magic of our enemies, of these parasite and terrorist freaking Jews in this world. Try to expose them for what they are and then come up with solutions. And I guess part of the solution in this case is to explain to you how others will steal energy from you. So, these methods include subconscious manipulation using praise. Yeah, when someone praises you. I've had experiences with this when I was younger. My best friend, or at least I thought was my best friend for most of my younger year life, he was always throwing compliments and trying to make you feel good about yourself, you know? But then what I noticed eventually when I got older is that he only made you feel good about yourself because he wanted something from you. Yeah, you have to watch out for this. So yes, people will use your subconsciously manipulate you using praise. Or they could just intimidate you, like bullies in school. Folks, they could even touch you. If the wrong individual touches you, I think it's possible they could steal your light or your energy from you. these individuals could evoke emotions or psychic attacks. And they can even use seduction. And, well, if you examine these six ways to steal your light, I think all of them are tactics used by our enemies. And so the goal is to increase our awareness of what's happening beneath the surface. So let me give you an example of praise. You know, praise is tricky, folks, because our minds associate positive attributes to it, right? You know, parents will feel good about themselves when they praise their children. And the inflated child feels good when he's praised, right? Well, the shadow implications behind praise, however, really are monumental, folks. We've already learned from psychologist Carol Dweck in her research that praise fosters a fixed mindset that impairs a child's ability to learn and grow. So this probably Jewess says, right? But really, this is just the beginning. The unconscious intention behind most forms of praise is manipulation, folks. And that is the detached manipulator archetype. We'll use praise as a tool to get others to do what it wants, as well as to steal their light. Yeah, think about it. Parents praise their children to get them to behave the way they want. Then they become more compliant. But, you know, by praising... Yeah, parents will praise their children to get them to behave the way they want, right? And we praise these, you know, young children. These, you know, there's a phrase out there called high chair tyrants, right? By serving our children. And then we don't know how to handle the tyrant's demands. But by praising the tyrant, telling them they are good, well, we're subtly forcing them to repress their inner tyrant. Then they become more compliant and repress aspects of the tyrant. And this repression helps explain why the shadow in most individuals grows so big by age 18. This is according to that Chua. I don't know if I agree with... I think I see what she's saying here by praising them. I don't think that's the best example, though. But there was something about this that I read earlier about the children. This is it. How parents will steal energy from their children. If you're a parent, have you ever come home from a bad day of work and you couldn't wait to hug your young child? Do you feel like hugging and being around your children instantly makes you feel better? Well, why might that be so? Well, parents frequently steal the QI energy from their children through hugs and kisses and touching. And this is done unconsciously, of course, but kissing a child on the top of their heads, for example, is an excellent way to draw their energy. Now, I know that seems awful to even imply that, but could there be something to this? Why is it that the parent feels better? Why is it that children don't like hugging older people, for example? You know, our parents when we're young make you feel guilty. Oh, go give your aunt a hug. And children generally don't like hugging, you know? Why is that? Is it because they're just, you know, brats? Spoiled children? Or could it possibly be that they're maybe at a younger age more in tune with themselves, less contaminated, if you will, and can tell when someone is, you know, vampirizing their energy? Just something to think about, folks. Maybe I'm off. Maybe I don't know. But if you're a parent, and when you feel like you're tired or experiencing emotional imbalance, try, well, I would try to stay clear of your children if you don't want to vampirize off of them. Now, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's something else. When you're around people you love, maybe that brings your mood up. Maybe it's not vampirism. I don't know. Again, folks, I'm not trying, especially right now, especially in this instance where I am pro-family and I love, you know, I love the innocence of children, the beauty of children. And I love the idea of family. And I don't want to, like, tell you not to hug and kiss and, you know, that's not what I'm saying here. But just maybe there's something to it. That's all I'm suggesting. Maybe there is something to it on an unconscious level. And, yeah, the other ways, like I said, there's psychic attacks, touching, and just really beware of these two archetypes, the denying innocent one and the helpless victim. Oh, they, the 6 million. But Jews are innocent. We're not genociding the white race. You're an anti-Semite, did you? Boy, Jews are actually both of these two archetypes of psychic or energetic vampires now, aren't they? Now add the media and the porn and everything else that they influence us. Jews are psychic vampires. They're even real blood-drinking vampires. And yes, folks, blood contains energy. Especially when they torture these poor Aryan children to death. When they kidnap these Aryan, beautiful Aryan children. Terrorize them to a point to where their adrenaline kicks in. And that's when they go in for the kill. And harvest the blood for the adrenochrome. Is it a coincidence that it's Jews who have been accused of this for G-D only knows how long? Oy vey. Blood libel. Oh, I know, folks. The denying innocent one. Jews fit that to a T. We're just poor, helpless victims. The 6 million never forget. All right, so I think I've proven a case, or at least made a case for psychic vampirism, which is the stealing of your light, the stealing of your energy. And, you know, earlier I was talking, again, I'm going to mention this, about the stones, the ice cream cone and the donut-shaped cones. Well, and I mentioned, like, the stadiums. You know, these stadiums are, like, coliseums are round, like a donut. They have columns, which are like antenna. And I still haven't figured out what the ice cream cone could be that would resonate the... you know, the ringing, the bell sound. I haven't figured that out yet. But in modern days, our stadiums are still round. And a modern-day torus stone could be the Roden or Roden coil. Any of you ever heard of this before? You get the chance, look up the Roden coil, R-O-D-I-N. It's kind of shaped like a donut. And actually, the Roden coil, I looked up, they are used in modern sports stadiums. or at least the model. And they form, I looked this up, like a torus. Where is that? There's a connection I made to torus stones and the Roden coil. If you have time, look into that, because there is definitely something to it. The Ankh, the A-N-K-H, the Egyptian Ankh, could be an example of a Roden coil or a Tesla egg or a torus. Look into cymatics as well. Cymatics is when, frequencies changed and something changes shape. Like I told you about the sponge. It's a great example of just putting a plain sponge in front of like a speaker and it changes the frequency. And you can see different patterns form. So imagine, it's been said that the Earth, it's like an electromagnetic cage, right? And it's kept at a particular very low frequency, which is why the music, modern music, it is a tempo like the heart rate. So it keeps you kind of like at a heart rate level. There's many, many examples, that can, if you use your mind, prove all this. Again, you're not going to find the answers in academia like they, because they don't want you to know. So you have to use your head, folks. Try to forget everything you've been taught or told and have a clean slate up there. I'm telling you, I've had so many people ask me how to quiet your mind because I've talked about it a lot. And once you're able to quiet your mind, folks, that's the first battle. You're able to do that. You're able to actually control your thoughts and keep random thoughts from invading your space. You are then free to think about what you want to think about. You're not bombarded with, information from the media or, worthless radio shows or worthless articles you read or watch on the TV or, keep your mind open. I'm telling you, you'll be a lot less stressed out. And your intuition just might wake up, it might awaken. Because I'm telling you, I get a lot of information from my intuition. Just, thoughts will come to me. They don't, I guess they kind of do pop in my head, but they pop in my head because I've been thinking about it myself, like trying to figure something out, right? Instead of worthless media from or information from the media or some stupid song you hear on the radio popping in your head and being stuck in your head. If you're able to eliminate that, you're able to think about things you want to think about and look up things you want to look up. And if you can't find the answer, and if your mind is clear, well, then it leaves some space for your intuition to pop an answer into your head instead of being cluttered with all the worthless crap you've consumed that day, or that week, or that year, and that lifetime. See, that's the black magic, folks. The black magic is the enemy, the Jew, bombarding your minds with worthless, harmful information or thoughts. And we need to learn how to clean it out. And they're telling you, they use everything at their disposal, folks. They use color as a form of energy. Certain colors, like red. Red is said to be a vitality or courage or self-confidence, right? And maybe in a positive way. But use you know, when you need to meet a demanding day or when you feel drained of energy, the color red could provide the power from the earth, and it could give energy on all levels. I don't know. But there's something to colors, folks. There most definitely is. And there's much, much more to the universe, if you will, than just our color spectrum. I'm sure of it. I don't think ETs are traveling in spaceships millions of light years away to get to us. I think if there are any other types of ETs or other life out there, it's right here in front of us. Just change the frequency. Change the radio dial, if you will. Change the frequency and see what happens. Of course, you know, we don't really have any way to do that. We're pretty stuck on a range of frequencies, but it makes sense to me. Really does. Let's see, what else could I get into here, folks? Richard, do I have any callers? I thought I might have heard something earlier, but it could have been my computer, too. I don't know.
No,
still there. Richard,
no caller. You're still coming in fine, but yeah, that was just maybe a little glitch you heard.
Okay.
But this is great, William. I mean, your signal, your connection is fantastic with this method. It may be a little more expensive, but it looks like we'll have you reliably on for the whole show with no disconnects. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm very happy. Yeah, I guess I could get into, I said that I might explain what's going on here. There, I mean, I still have so much more information here, and I'm in no hurry to get to it because I think I'm going to keep building on this information. So I don't want to overload everyone's brains today. I think I've given them a lot of information to think about. I know I do have a habit of sometimes, you know, trying to squeeze as much information in at once, and it's hard for people to keep up because especially when I keep going week after week. Yeah, I think what I'll do, folks, is stop with this information for the day. And maybe I'll just talk a little bit about what's been going on and how I've been trying to solve these problems. Many of you know my internet is absolutely awful, okay? So if it's not one thing, it's another. Yeah, you're right, Richard. It does cost me a lot more money to do it this way, but honestly, folks, nothing to me is more important than giving or doing a quality show when it comes to audio. To me, there's nothing more irritating when I'm trying to do an informative show or broadcast, and you hear the first three or four words of my sentence, and then you can't hear, you know, the middle, and then I come back on the end of the sentence. You know, that annoys the hell out of me. I can't even listen to my shows myself to go back. I usually like to just go back and listen to my shows once, you know, to hear, you know, what I said and to correct my mistakes and stuff like that. But I can't even do it when the audio is awful. So I don't know if I can't do it. I don't know how I expect my listeners to listen. But I think I've corrected it. At least for now, I just buy minutes. I use the South African code on Richard's call-in network, or call-in. And, it seems to be working good this way. I can't wait to hear the recording. However, I don't know how long I'll be doing it like this with this particular phone. I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I am pretty sure that I have a job. Now, I'm supposed to be getting like a phone and everything with this job. I've not received the phone yet. I was kind of thinking I was going to get it last week, but I never did. I think I'll find out tomorrow. But if I get this job, everything in my life is going to change. Most of you know, I stay here with my partner, and my partner is taking care, my partner and I are taking care of her mother. And her health hasn't really been great the past, it's been better now, but last year she was really in the hospital for most of the year. And so we were, constantly at the hospital and constantly trying to get her back to health. And we have done this pretty well. But now that she's back to health, and if I'm able to get a job, I really think it is wise I get my own place, somewhere very close, so that I'm not far away from my partner, and, you know, somewhere where she can come also, and, you know, we can be a couple. But the one of the major points is I don't have enough time to do the research that I like to do or I'm accustomed to doing. I don't have the time to do shows. I would like to do a show 5 days a week if I could, but I really can't. And so if this job works out and I get it like I think I am, I'm supposed to be going in tomorrow. Well, hopefully I'll find out very soon, and possibly even get paid Friday. Now, if that happens, my whole world will open up, folks, and hopefully I'll be able to solve a lot of the problems that I've been having in the past, you know, with the bad audio and not really having the space to speak loudly when I'm broadcasting if I have to, right? I'm sharing a house, and I guess my voice carries. My partner gets very fed up with me very quickly when my voice gets loud. And these issues really keep me from being able to put out the best show that I know I can. And so I'm really working on these issues, and hopefully, if this job works out, you'll be hearing more of me and with better audio and better, I don't know what the word I'm looking for here is. I'll just be able to put on a better performance, a better broadcast, and ultimately a better show. And I'll be able to be more active on the internet, instead of having to scrape for shekels all the time to get online. I'll have 24/7 internet. I'll be able to use the phone as my modem, you know. And so I could even actually open up the Hewitt House of Radio again and start playing all my old archives, which I'm very excited about. Hopefully, I'll be able to create a better website that cannot be tampered with as easy, you know, kind of like what Richard has done here at Revision Media. I'd like to start a website like that using code, and ultimately upload all of my 150 plus articles I've written, my 200 plus radio shows, my book, and just other art that I've created. And so, folks, that really is my goal. It all comes down to whether I get this job or not. If it isn't for sure, then, you know, I guess I'll just have to keep doing it like this, buying airtime. At least I'll have a quality audio once a week. Maybe I'll have to figure out a different place to do the show. I don't know. But nothing hurts me more than, you know, when I upset my partner. I don't like doing it. And so it keeps me, it restricts me in a way from, I think, doing my best and doing as much as I could. So hopefully, folks, you can expect bigger and better and more from William D. Hewitt and the Hewitt House of Publications and Radio. If I even keep that name. I actually have a new name for a website as well. I think I might just scrap the entire D. Hewitt House of Radio Publications and Radio. My name alone, D. Hewitt, has been red flagged. I can't, under certain profiles, I can't even share my website on Facebook. My website name, the address alone, gets flagged. And it violates Facebook's community standards, if you can believe that. The Hewitt House of Publications and Radio violates Facebook's community standards. So it might be time I just scrap this platform and build something newer, something bigger and better. These are just some of the plans, folks. I really, really wish I could do more. And of course, if I am able to get the Hewitt House of Publications and Radio up, or by at least by its new name even, if I am able to get that up and going, that does not mean that I intend on not being a part of Revision Media. I intend on being with Revision Media as long as Richard will have me. I know at the moment it is a little bit of an inconvenience for him, me being halfway across the world. But if I do end up getting a little place of my own, even if it's just for me to go do my work and to do a radio show, I could possibly, you know, be up during regular hours in the middle of the night. I have all these thoughts. You know, I'm trying to see what I can do to make things easier for everybody, not just myself. So I hope that could be a possibility. I'd love to join a roundtable or call in to the other host's shows. Unfortunately, I hate to say it, but I've not even really been able to listen to the other hosts on the network shows. I haven't even been able to keep up with Mike's Sledge's shows. I don't know where Mike's been. I've not spoken to him in a while, but, you know, hopefully all this will change. I really hope so. All right, well, folks, if there aren't any callers or anybody out there, I know it's not a full 2 hours, but I really don't have anything else to say. I think I've laid everything out on the table. You can expect me back next week, and I will pick up where I left off, and hopefully I'll move on to think of it as like an ongoing series. I'm going to try to tell a story in a way. You know, it's going to just, my research is going to kind of build on top of each other. I kind of like where it's been going, and hopefully you'll all find it interesting as well. So I'd like to thank Richard for having me on, and I'd like to thank all of you listening live and in the archives. Please be patient with me. I promise. There's much, much more to come from the Hewitt House of Publications and Radio, or my new title, and from Revision Media. So thank you, everyone, and cheers.